Imagine you are deeply passionate about your faith. You look at this totally chaotic political landscape and you decide, okay, it is finally time to get involved.
Right, you're fired up and ready to do something.
Exactly. So you join this specialized faith-based advocacy training network. You walk in on day one, fully ready for battle, and the very first thing they tell you to do is to put your sword away.
Which is pretty unexpected.
Yeah, they tell you to stop trying to save the world and instead go fight for the rights of the atheist down the street.
I mean, it is a profound contradiction to how civic engagement is normally pitched to us, you know. Typically, the message is that, well, everything is on the line, the sky is falling,
Yeah.
and you need to mobilize immediately to defeat your enemies.
Right.
But this source we're looking at is actively trying to deconstruct that exact instinct.
So, okay, let's unpack this. Our mission for this deep dive is to explore a foundational document. It's titled Session 001 Introduction to the Champions Network. And this comes from the Lutheran Center for Religious Liberty, or the
Yeah,
LCRL.
LCRO.
And we are going to examine how this curriculum trains everyday men and women, people who just want to serve their communities and honor Christ in their local parishes, to become effective, balanced advocates in the public square without losing their minds in the process.
Because that's the danger, right? Losing your mind. In a culture that is just saturated with information overload and political anxiety, what we are analyzing today is a highly structured methodology for lowering the civic temperature.
Lowering the temperature, I like that.
Yeah, it provides this framework for believers to approach their local communities thoughtfully, you know, analytically, rather than operating in this constant state of reaction.
But before we look at the specific curriculum, like the meetings, the action plans, all that, the text really insists on establishing the worldview driving the entire operation first.
Right, the foundation.
Exactly. It introduces something called the two-kingdom framework. According to the document, God engages the world in two distinct ways. First, there is a kingdom meant to bless the culture and just preserve the world for now.
And then the second one.
Right. The second is a kingdom meant to save individuals from sin and death through the gospel. So the network's stated goal is to equip participants to be two kingdom people.
And that distinction between blessing and saving, it really forms the structural logic for everything that follows. They often refer to the civic realm as the left-hand kingdom and the spiritual realm as the right-hand kingdom.
Left hand and right hand, got it.
Yeah, and the curriculum teaches that the spiritual realm, where salvation occurs, operates on completely different mechanics than the civil realm, because the civil realm's goal is just temporal preservation. So you are essentially learning how to navigate the left-hand kingdom. So the town square, the school board, the voting booth.
As a faithful citizen.
Exactly. While recognizing that the right-hand kingdom is where your ultimate hope actually resides.
It really makes me think of like holding dual citizenship. You carry a passport for the city you live in right now. You have tangible responsibilities there.
Paying taxes, voting.
Yeah, picking up trash, keeping the neighborhood safe. But your core identity and your ultimate allegiance belong to an entirely different country. You are holding both of those realities at the exact same time. But practically speaking, I have to wonder, how does this dual citizenship mindset actually alter a person's behavior when they turn on the 24/7 political news cycle?
Well, what's really fascinating here is how this theology acts as a pressure release valve for modern political anxiety.
A pressure release valve.
Yeah, think about it. If a person believes their ultimate citizenship is elsewhere and that the cosmic, you know, saving of the world is already handled in that right-hand spiritual kingdom, the stakes of the next local election fundamentally shift.
Oh, wow. That makes a lot of sense.
The text teaches that human beings are not required to save the world through the political process. Your job in the civic realm is simply to be a blessing, to maintain order, to do good, to serve the neighbor.
Just serve the neighbor.
Right? You do not have to carry the weight of humanity's ultimate salvation on your shoulders when you walk into a city council meeting.
I mean, that reframes the standard narrative entirely, because if you look at modern political rhetoric today, engagement is almost always framed as totally
Oh,
apocalyptic.
definitely. Everything is life or death.
Right. But if the mindset is that you don't need to achieve ultimate salvation through politics, what exactly is the goal? Like, are they trying to quietly take over the local government? The source material tackles this explicitly, and it actually argues the complete opposite.
It does. It uses incredibly sharp language to dispel any notion of a takeover. The text states plainly that being a champion for religious liberty is not about conquering the world for Christ.
Right.
It specifically says this is not, quote, a new season of the Crusades.
A new season of the Crusades. Yeah, the text actually points back to American founding fathers like James Madison and Thomas Jefferson to articulate their philosophy. The core argument is that freedom of conscience is a natural, unalienable right.
Which is foundational to the American experiment.
Right. And this network argues that fighting for that right extends to everyone, specifically including those who are not religious or God-fearing. And I gotta admit, seeing a church-based organization explicitly dedicate resources to fighting for the religious liberty of non-believers, it made me pause.
It is surprising, for sure.
Yeah, like, why does the curriculum emphasize protecting the rights of people whose worldviews they fundamentally disagree with?
Right. So if we connect this to the bigger picture, the underlying mechanism is mutually assured protection. It is like the foundation of a house.
Yeah.
If you grant the government the power to dictate what happens in the absolute privacy of a citizen's own mind, their conscience, you have destroyed the foundation.
Right. The whole house comes down.
Exactly. Once the state can tip that over, the walls and the roof, you know, speech, press, assembly, they have nothing left to stand on. So by establishing the precedent that the government cannot coerce the conscience of an atheist, you are simultaneously reinforcing the precedent that the government cannot coerce the conscience of a Christian.
Mutually assured protection. That is powerful. And to illustrate how they do not want participants to act, the text uses a really vivid analogy from the Bible. They point to the Apostle Peter in the Garden of Gethsemane.
Oh, right. The sword story.
Yeah. When the authorities came to arrest Jesus, Peter panicked. He got reactive, pulled out a sword, and literally started lopping off ears. And Jesus had to stop him, heal the man, and essentially say, no, not that way.
It is such a striking metaphor for the kind of political zealotry we see today.
Mm-hmm.
People step into the public square and figuratively lop off the ears of their opponents because they're just so convinced their cause is righteous.
Yeah, they feel completely justified in the aggression.
Right. But this network is explicitly training its members to put the sword away. And to accomplish this, they introduce some specialized vocabulary to give participants a new lens on civic life. Terms like dynamic differentiation, reformation restraint, and vocation respect.
Okay, let's break those down. Because throwing around academic vocabulary can easily alienate people if we don't understand the application, especially for folks just trying to serve in their parishes.
Absolutely. Let's take dynamic differentiation. This is the mental discipline of separating a person's internal value from their temporal political ideas.
Okay, so what does that look like in practice?
Well, in a heated town hall meeting, it means looking at someone who is maybe shouting at you and differentiating between their abrasive political stance and their inherent worth as a human being.
Oh, that is hard to do.
It takes practice. And then there is vocation respect.
Vocation meaning like someone's calling or job.
Correct. It means honoring the office of the civic leader, even if you vehemently disagree with the person currently holding it.
Yeah.
You respect the structure of government as a tool for order in that left-hand kingdom, rather than treating politicians you dislike as totally illegitimate.
Wow. Okay, and what about the last one?
Right. The most prominent concept they teach is reformation restraint.
Which the text describes as the discipline to slow down. Before you rush into the civic realm to force changes, even changes that seem undeniably correct to you, you have to pause.
Take a breath.
Yeah. You exercise restraint to observe what is already happening in the community. You do not kick the doors in. You respect the existing structures and act deliberately.
So if the mindset is to step back, observe, and put the sword away, the natural question is, how does an average person with a full-time job actually train themselves to do that without just becoming totally passive?
Right. You still want to be involved.
Exactly. And the document's answer is a highly structured local curriculum called the Champions Academy.
Yes, the Champions Academy. The source outlines this whole progression. Participants start as champion apprentices and work through a 5-stage journey to eventually become a champion knight.
Which is fun terminology.
Yeah. And the use of apprentice implies that this is a craft you have to learn. You aren't an expert just because you have an opinion. The Academy curriculum is built on a 5-fold purpose. 1 is inspirational. 2 is educational, specifically aiming to depoliticize issues.
That one is key.
Right. 3 is prayerful. 4 is social, so building a support system. And 5 is missional, executing a local advocacy plan.
I want to focus on that second goal, the mechanism of depoliticizing an issue, because it's so central to their strategy. In our current climate, literally everything, from school curriculums to grocery store brands, is highly politicized and weaponized.
Oh, everything is a culture war now.
Exactly. So the Academy teaches participants to extract the toxic tribalism from an issue. By applying that two-kingdom framework we talked about, they learn to analyze a local policy on its actual merits for the community, rather than treating, you know, a zoning law as a cosmic battle between good and evil.
The text mentions they achieve this through individual online modules, but they place a massive emphasis on local gatherings, these champions chapters. And these chapters lean heavily into reading. They offer both a casual reader list and an avid reader list.
Right, so you can engage at your own pace.
Yeah, and they actually encourage these groups to meet in local coffee houses or restaurants, suggesting that studying these topics in a public space serves as a form of soft evangelism. Mm-hmm. But this raises a major red flag for me.
Oh, really? How so?
Well, with the specialized vocabulary, the multi-stage journeys, the reading lists, is there a danger that this just becomes an exclusive intellectual echo chamber, like a Christian book club that never actually impacts the community outside of that coffee shop?
That is a very fair critique. And the authors of the document clearly anticipate that exact concern. The text lays down a strict rule for the chapters. It says, we are not just learning for learning's sake.
Okay.
Yeah, they attempt to bridge the gap between abstract theory and civic utility through community engagement plans. The strategy is to pair this heavy restrained study with immediate, low-stakes civic action.
But is just showing up and praying actually enough to prevent this from being an echo chamber? Like, how does the text move them from a coffee shop to actual civic utility? What does an engagement plan actually look like? Are they lobbying?
Well, they are not lobbying in the traditional high-pressure sense. The assignment for this first session asks the apprentices to identify places of civic authority in their community. So, city hall, the police station, the school board office.
Places where decisions are made.
Right. And the immediate task is to simply visit those spaces and commit to praying for the people working there. The text emphasizes that governing authorities need to actually know you as a human being.
Oh.
The mechanism here is relational presence. Because if you only ever contact your mayor with an angry email demanding a policy change, you are just noise.
You're just another angry constituent.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But if you are a person who consistently shows up, affirms the heavy burden of their vocation, and respectfully engages, you transition from being an activist to being a trusted neighbor.
They also target specific calendar events to practice this presence. The document highlights utilizing the National Day of Prayer in May, state legislative sessions, and local elections. They're taking this really high-minded theology of restraint and giving the apprentice a very practical directive. Walk down to the municipal building, shake a hand, and quietly pray for the people making the decisions.
It shifts the believer from a posture of fear and aggression into a posture of service, which actually brings up a critical piece of context we need to examine.
What's that?
Well, we have been discussing the individual having coffee and serving the city, but who exactly is building this curriculum? And why have they adopted this specific approach to church and state?
Oh, right. Let's look at the institutional definitions provided in the text. The LCRL, the Lutheran Center for Religious Liberty, was launched in 2017 to be an advocacy voice in Washington, D.C., focusing on issues of life, marriage, and religious liberty. And the LCRL is an initiative of a much larger body, the LCMS.
The LCMS, which stands for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. And the source offers some really illuminating historical context here. This is a conservative Protestant denomination founded in 1847 by German immigrants.
Okay.
Today, they have over 2 million baptized members. And the text notes they're deeply rooted in confessional Lutheranism, specifically binding themselves to something called the Book of Concord.
So for you listening, what exactly is the Book of Concord? And why does an immigrant history from 1847 matter when we are talking about a modern civic training network?
Great question. The Book of Concord is a historical collection of foundational doctrinal statements from the 1500s that basically set the absolute boundaries of what confessional Lutherans believe. It is essentially their theological constitution.
Okay, got it.
And that 19th century immigrant history, that is the engine driving this entire curriculum. Those German immigrants came to America specifically fleeing state coercion of their religious practices.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So they have a baked-in historical awareness of the devastation that occurs when the state dictates the conscience or when the church tries to wield the power of the government.
That explains so much. That explains why the text openly acknowledges a massive elephant in the room. many Christians are terrified of the political sphere.
Yeah, I want nothing to do with it.
Exactly. They look at the corruption and the vitriol, and they believe politics has absolute no place in the life of the church. The curriculum actually validates that fear of state overreach, agreeing that God distinguishes between the work of the church and the work of the state. But they introduce a critical nuance.
Right. They don't say to stay out completely.
No, they argue that both the state and the church are God's institutions. They are not entirely sealed off from one another. They are meant to, quote, work in concert with one another.
Yeah, and I mean, this raises an important question regarding how we apply this today. If they are meant to work in concert, how does this network prevent the church from just becoming another political action committee?
Right.
Impartially speaking, the text solves this by drawing a really sharp line between the institution and the individual. The curriculum explicitly teaches that it is not the job of the institutional church to wield state power or pass laws forcing the public to adhere to its doctrines.
That goes back to the two-kingdom thing.
Exactly. Instead, the focus is entirely on the individual believer. The individual's vocation, their calling to serve the city and be a blessing to the culture. So the network magnifies its impact not by flexing institutional lobbying muscle, but by growing a grassroots network of two kingdom-minded citizens who act decently and thoughtfully in their own backyards.
So I guess the question is, what does this all mean? It means the energy of this network is fundamentally decentralized. It relies on a million small interactions at the local level, you know, school boards, neighborhood watch meetings, city councils, rather than one giant mandate from a headquarters in Washington.
Which brings us full circle to their core philosophy,
Reformation
restraint, slowing down. The text actually concludes this introductory session by assigning the champion apprentices a very practical piece of homework.
Oh, the memorization task?
Yes. They are instructed to memorize the network's theme passage from the Bible, 1 Peter chapter 2, verses 15 through 17.
And the mechanism they suggest for memorizing it perfectly mirrors their civic philosophy, too. The text advises against trying to cram the whole passage into your brain at once. It says to take it phrase by phrase. Learn one phrase this week, add the next phrase next week.
Just steady progress.
Right. Speak it out loud, mull it over while you drive. It is about letting the concepts slowly seep into your daily rhythm rather than rushing to master it all immediately.
Let's actually analyze the text of those verses, because it beautifully encapsulates the tension of the two-kingdom framework. The passage reads, "For this is the will of God, that by doing good, you should put to silence the ignorance of foolish people. Live as people who are free, not using your freedom as a cover-up for evil, but living as servants of God. Honor everyone, love the brotherhood, fear God, honor the emperor."
The tension between live as people who are free and honor the emperor is incredible, especially when you consider that the emperor at the time that was written was likely a tyrant.
Oh, absolutely a tyrant.
It perfectly summarizes the journey of this deep dive. We started by exploring the two-kingdom framework, the idea that a person holds dual citizenship. They are called to actively bless their civic community in the left-hand kingdom, while their ultimate salvation is secured in the right-hand kingdom.
Right. And we examine the philosophy of restraint, rejecting the instinct for a cultural crusade in favor of mutually assured protection.
Right.
Fighting for the freedom of conscience for all people, even those with fiercely opposing worldviews.
Even the atheist down the street.
Exactly. And we detailed how the Champions Academy translates that abstract theology into granular local action. From depoliticizing issues in a coffee shop book club to practicing relational presence by praying for local officials, it really is a methodical system for overcoming the fear of the public square.
Which leaves us with a truly fascinating thought to mull over as we wrap up. Think back to that messy, chaotic town square we visualized at the beginning. In an era where civic engagement is almost exclusively defined by who can generate the most outrage, who can shout the loudest, and who can demand total victory over their neighbors. What if that is just a dead end?
A total dead end.
What if, as an everyday citizen trying to serve your local community, the most radical, disruptive, and ultimately effective action you could possibly take is to practice Reformation restraint, taking a deliberate breath, putting the sword away, and choosing to listen to, pray for, and fiercely protect the freedoms of a neighbor that you profoundly disagree with?
It is a framework that completely inverts the modern political playbook.
It really does. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Take that concept of restraint with you the next time you turn on the news or walk into a community meeting and keep exploring.